Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Alan Chartok. My guest is John Perkel, a great friend for many years who has spent more than three decades as an orchestra librarian for the Buffalo Philharmonic, Rochester Philharmonic, New York Philharmonic, and Boston Symphony Orchestra. Perkel has also worked at the Tanglewood Music Center orchestral librarian during summers before retiring in 2016. John Perkel is now serving as music coordinator for the Berkshire Chamber Players. The group will perform its latest concert at the Stockbridge Library on January 19th at 6 p.m. Perkel now joins us to tell us more about the program, the concert series, and the newly formed Berkshire Chamber Players. But before we do that, old friend, I need you to tell me a little bit about your career as the music librarian or all those fabulous orchestras. What does the librarian do?
Thank you, Alan. The librarian is responsible for all the music that is performed by the orchestra, and in the case of the Boston Symphony, also the Boston Symphony Chamber Players. And the Boston Symphony has the hardest workload of any orchestra in the country because of the Boston Symphony, the Boston Pops, Tanglewood, and the Boston Symphony Chamber Players. And it is our job to make sure we have the right edition of every piece of music. That means we have to have familiarity with publishers, editions, repertoire, and we have to be a bit of a psychologist, as in any job, I guess, and we have to have a good sense of humor.
A lot of people don't know you started as a school teacher at Monument Mountain Regional High School.
Yes, I did, and I did that for 4 years. And I will treasure those moments as well, even though it wasn't the niche I really was looking for. But I made many friends, including you, Alan, through that four-year process.
So let's go back to the librarian business, because I'm just fascinated by that. So you worked for all of these orchestras. How did you move from one to the other? I think it's fair to say that you moved upwards in each of these cases, because the Boston Symphony, of course, is the best orchestra in the world. So that's my own contentiousness looking for trouble. So how did that happen? Did you see a want ad in each case?
Except for the first orchestra, my first experience was with the Buffalo Philharmonic, and I have to thank my wife, Barbara, because initially I had no intention of going to Buffalo, and I'm so glad that she encouraged me because I really had a great experience there. I learned so much. I had a great mentor, Jules Kovach, and he really taught me so much, and he treated me really like a son, and it enabled me to feel confident enough to 4 years later apply for the head librarian job with the Rochester Philharmonic.
And so you get to the Boston Symphony, to the New York Philharmonic, and you brush shoulders with the greats and near greats, right?
I really did. I feel so blessed, having worked with Bernstein and Rostropovich and Seiji Ozawa, and the list goes on and on. I can't even believe it myself. It was a dream come true for me, especially Boston.
My conversations with Seiji always were, I was always encouraged to talk about the Boston Red Sox with him. Did you have such a relationship?
A little bit. I'm a huge sports fan, so naturally, any time the Red Sox especially were doing well, it was very easy to talk to him about it. He went to many games, and I had the pleasure of being on the field three times, because the members of the orchestra played the national anthem, and it was surreal being on the field, and especially with Seiji Ozawa.
So did you ever make a mistake as the librarian?
Absolutely. Yes, of course. I could tell you one big one, which has a happy ending. It's rather unbelievable. We were playing a Pops concert at Boston College to raise scholarship money for the students. It was an annual. It still exists as an annual event. And at the rehearsal, we didn't rehearse every single piece of music. One piece was not done, a piece by John Williams called Hymn to New England. And so I didn't even think about it. And we get to the concert, and the librarian and the harpist always get to every service early. The harpist, because of all the strings he or she has to tune, and I have to be there for many reasons, including if somebody needs something. And one of the cellists came up to me and said, John, I don't have the music to Hymn to New England in my folder. And I said, oh, we're not doing that tonight. And he showed me the sheet, and my eye missed it because of the way it was written. It was all jumbled together, not with the composer separated from the piece, which is no excuse. I mean, it was my error. And I said, oh, my gosh, what do I do? So I called the library at the hall, which is about 10 minutes away, and the only way to do it was to have one of the other librarians who was there give it to a state trooper. The state trooper drove to the Conti Forum at Boston College, and this big burly man comes in. He said, I'm looking for John Perkel. I said, I'm John. He said, well, I have something for you. And I said, you saved my life. And so it went off without a hitch, but we had to move it to the second half of the concert. And I was taking the train back to my house, and I was still in my tuxedo. And somebody said to me, were you with the orchestra? I said, yes. He said, what happened with Hymn to New England? So I told the story, and that's what happened.
Now, I know that some of these scores, because the conductor wants it that way, are annotated. Is that problematic?
It's not problematic unless the conductor waits till the very last minute to expect us to receive his or her score and then implement what he wants into all the parts. As long as we have enough notification, it's actually something I really enjoy doing. You feel like you're a part of the process. Even though you're not playing the notes, you're hopefully helping the musicians to be able to play what the conductor wants.
Yes. So, of course, I'm thinking of Danny Kaye talking about the little fiddle and, you know, all of that and all of his fun with those annotations. Are there times that you as a musician say, what the heck did he do this for?
Absolutely, but my job is not to question the motive or the decision of the conductor, unless I am pretty sure that there's an error, because conductors too make mistakes. So once in a while, a conductor, this never happened in Boston, but would give me cryptic instructions, and I learned that if you have a question, you better ask it. Don't assume something or you'll do the wrong thing.
But I'm sure some conductors say, young man, what are you doing? Why are you questioning me?
Yes, it turned out to be a hilarious experience. In my very first week with the Rochester Philharmonic, we had a wonderful conductor from Poland, Jerzy Semkov, who was the interim music director, and he didn't really know me. It was our first week together. We were doing the Beethoven Ninth Symphony, and it was intermission of the rehearsal. And he said to me, I'd like you to put a particular marking in every single part. And I knew that it was physically impossible. We had 1 minute left before the continuation of the rehearsal. So I did the obvious logical thing, and that is I got up on the podium and I made an announcement. And he didn't like that. And I was upset, and I was backstage, and outside of the Shell in Rochester, if you do something, it can be heard on stage. So I kicked the empty music case, which went end over end, made a loud noise, and everyone in the orchestra laughed. I didn't realize that the conductor also laughed until later, and I thought, oh, my gosh, I'm fired. That's it. But we wound up having a very warm relationship, and he really treated me very well.
Okay, let's spend the next 5 minutes or so talking about what you're very passionate about now, the Berkshire Chamber Players. Now, John, what's your own musical background?
I was a violinist. I was never a professional violinist, but I did play for many years, and I always enjoyed playing chamber music because it's one to a part. Everybody has a unique part to play. As much as I love symphony orchestras, it's different because if you're a violinist, you're one of about 30, and if you're a cellist, you're one of about 12. Not to take away from that art form at all, but chamber music is much more intimate. And after I retired, I wanted to do something that I loved, And on a whim, I went to the Stockbridge Library, spoke to the head librarian, and the woman I actually went to college with, Barbara Allen, who works in the Historical Society downstairs, and I proposed this idea to them, and they were totally in favor of it. They were able to get funding. We've had two concerts so far that have both sold out, and we have our next one
on January 19th at 6 p.m. in the Stockbridge Library.
Yeah.
Okay, so chamber music groups don't have a conductor. They just sit next to each other and play.
That's right.
Well, why would they do that? Don't they need somebody to keep them in line?
Well, there are exceptions. If it's a large chamber ensemble, especially with a more contemporary repertoire that's a little bit more difficult, there is sometimes a need for a conductor. But generally, chamber music is played as a group endeavor where each person has an equal voice about what they're doing. I sit in on these rehearsals, and it's really wonderful to see these people get along so well. They're all former Tanglewood students, with the exception of Ron Feldman, who is a great cellist, played in the BSO for 35 years, yeah, and now conducts the Brookshire Symphony. And he is the guru, and yet he loves to hear what everyone else has to say. So it's a group endeavor, and it works really well.
How good are they? I mean, the Boston Symphony is, of course, the best orchestra in the world, as I've said before. But how good is this particular group of ex-students at Tanglewood?
They are excellent. I wouldn't pick them. There are two criteria for me. Of course, their ability and also their wonderful personalities. And every one of these people I know well. I worked with these students for so many years. And luckily, one of them lives in Chatham, New York, very close to,
sure,
to the Berkshires. And the other two are in New York, so it's not far. And they jump at this idea. They love playing together. They know each other, and that helps.
So how do you get one of these valuable tickets if it sells out every time? People who are listening now are going to want to go. How do they get? Can they call somebody? What do they do?
You have to go to the Stockbridge Library. I suppose you could call them and reserve them. They don't yet have the capability of accepting a credit card. So they would have to work out something. I can give the phone number if that would be helpful.
Sure.
It is 413-298-5501. I can tell our listening audience that more than half the tickets have already been sold. It's a small venue. It's a beautiful venue with great acoustics, but it is small. And if you're interested in going, please don't wait. We had to turn away several people for the last concert.
No overflow room?
Well, we do. We a little bit, but there's a certain limit they can't exceed.
Right. So now, has there been any major frustration you've faced other than the fact that you can't get enough people in?
The only other minor frustration is the fact that, as of now, there is no piano in the Stockbridge Library.
Oh.
Now, we have a tremendous repertoire without piano, but with piano, it's even much larger. So we're hoping that maybe we can get a piano, that someone perhaps will donate one in the future.
I'll bet there's some listener out there who says, yeah, I can do this. In any case, it's wonderful to talk to my old pal, John Perkel, music coordinator for the Berkshire Chamber Players. The latest of their concert series will be on January 19th at 6 p.m. in the Stockbridge Library. I'm Alan Chartok. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. And John, we are so grateful for your participation.
Thank you for your time, Alan. I appreciate it very much.